When you come to Carrabba's Italian Grill on a Monday, you're going to say,
wow, a three-course meal for only $12.99?
On Amore Monday, get Carrabba's delicious made-from-scratch entrees, including super salad and your choice of an appetizer or dessert.
That's a huge meal for only $12.99. Wow.
Choose Carrabba's homemade lasagna, prosciutto-wrapped pork tenderloin, or linguine positano with chicken, plus two other courses.
Wow, now I love Mondays.
Come to Carrabba's this Amore Monday for a delicious three-course meal starting at only $12.99.
Wow.
From the front line.
It's not going to work, man.
From the tailgates. Representing KGYR and its stakeholders. We are the Forum for the Fans. The Bleed Blue Show. Flying solo, here's your host, Steve.
Yeah, another edition, Stakeholder Spotlight with Marlo at Drago NYC, Knicks Giant Yankee Rangers, the way we like them, especially big Knicks fan, shooting off the Knicks trolls. Marlo, it's good to have you on the Spotlight featuring yourself, man. What's going on, sir?
Hey, Steve, I'm doing good, man. How's it going?
I'm good. Can't wait to hear what's on your mind with our team, our sports, anything in general, because I was looking forward to speaking with you and letting you sound off on your Spotlight featuring yourself. So anywhere you would like to take it, sir, fire away.
Okay. there's a lot of stuff that's going on with our teams and with sports, obviously. I guess we have to first address the elephant in the room. I have to admit, before I even get into the Giants, I am unapologetically basking in this turmoil that's going on with the Patriots. I mean, it's been all day, and I know everyone is taking sides about Belichick and this whole thing with Jimmy Garoppolo and Brady. And I must admit, as much as I'm basking in this thing with the Patriots, I could see both sides and how it was a difficult decision. Because what they're saying, you know, from what I'm seeing is that, you know, Belichick was all in on Jimmy Garoppolo. And Kraft wants to be loyal to Tom Brady, who's not only won five championships, but he also just won a championship. It's not like Brady is like not doing well. He's having a good year this year. I mean, some people are predicting Brady is going to win the Super Bowl. You know, not only the Super Bowl, but also the MVP. That's how good he's playing in his 40s. So that's just pretty amazing. And that's a tough call for anybody. But the thing is, too, if you're the coach, you still work for Kraft. And if Kraft is telling you that, hey, you know, we're gonna stay with Tom until, as Dom likes to say, until the wheels fall off, then, you know, it would behoove you, if you are Belichick, you have to listen. But then Belichick, to give a little dig to Kraft, trades Jimmy Garoppolo for peanuts. You know, it's really a funny turn of events, and it's happening to the Patriots. You know, they're also known as this, oh, they're the standard, and they know how to treat people, and their system is good, because they always win. You know, let's just address that. Patriots are always winning. They're always successful. And, you know, it's a little bit annoying. So I'm basking a little bit in this turmoil, allegedly, that's going on between them. But I also can see that it's a little strange, you know, because I could see the view from both ends. I can see it from Kraft's view, and I can see it from Belichick's view of how, you know, how are they going to resolve this quarterback issue? Because here you have someone who's tried and true, and here you have someone that could be the future. Because, I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo is doing good in San Francisco. Now, I digress on that. Now, the NFL as a whole, this has been kind of bad for me. Well, sports actually has not been so good for me. The end of, you know, this new season, I must admit. But, you know, me personally, I was doing my, I was along with Colin Kaepernick, I believe he should have been playing. You know, there's no reason why he's not. He's better than at least half of the quarterbacks that are starting right now. And for them just to ostracize him the way that they did, and for his stance and his beliefs, I just thought was really ridiculous on the NFL's part. It showed a old boys club mentality, which I know is there with the NFL. And I feel that's the problem, not only with the NFL, but with a lot of organizations. You know, there's not enough diversity in position, in decision-making positions. And something like that, his abilities should usurp anything that they're, whatever problem they have with him. And he was a viable option. So, you know, I must admit, I haven't been too invested with the NFL this season. I know there's been a lot of amazing things that's going on, but one thing that's kind of good and bad about it with going along with my protests, my Giants absolutely killed me. They absolutely killed me this year. I mean, there was absolutely no reason that I – there's no way, Steve, that I could have ever foreseen the Giants being this bad this season. The Giants – excuse my phrase, but the Giants nixed us this year. They did a New York Knicks on us because we had such high hopes. You know, they get B. Marsh. You know, you got the great defense. Still, I'm annoyed that they haven't done much with the offensive line. And Flowers. Okay, Steve, I understand Flowers is playing out of position. I understand that. But he shouldn't, if he's playing out of position and he's that bad, what is this loyalty to the Flowers? Why is he on the front line at all? He is more of a liability than anything else. I mean, I feel they should have gotten rid of him or they should have tried to do something else. But what kills me, too, is it's almost like a broken record, just like with the Knicks has been. The Giants need a running game. Still don't have it. They need an offensive line, and they're killing Eli Manning. So as bad as the Giants have been, and I never liked McAdoo. Never liked him. They were making all this talk about, oh, McAdoo, he worked with Eli, so he could be able to take Eli to the next level. But does it look like he was really ready? Something, I just felt the Giants needed to do more. You know, the Giants' decision-making was very poor for another, quote-unquote, gold standard of the NFL, the Maras. They really dropped the ball, wet the bed, whatever you want to say. It really disappointed the fans, and they're not doing things right, and they haven't been doing it for the past few years. Now, me still, I will root for Eli Manning, and I'm still a big Eli Manning fan. I mean, he delivered us two Super Bowls, and I believe he's the first ballot Hall of Famer. Eli Manning, thank God he's durable as he is, because he's been basically running for his life for the past, you know, 2-3 years. He's running for his life because he has no protection. And it reminds me what his father went through, what they said when he was in New Orleans. He said his father was a great quarterback. They didn't have a front line. I heard Archie was getting killed all the time. And I don't understand how people can't make the obvious conclusion, well, you know, Eli's going to have interceptions and lead interceptions because he has he's not versatile because he can't hand it off to anybody. And he doesn't have an offensive line. So he has to hurry up and try to get rid of that ball. And sometimes the decision-making is not good because these guys, you got linebackers and everyone coming at you at full speed. As much as I can't stand Dallas, when Romo was playing, went out there and blustered that offensive line and got him in. And they had a running game. I think DeMarco Murray was still on there. Yeah, when I think Murray was still on there. I hope I'm saying his name right, even though they ran him to the ground. But that one season, Dallas was doing good. And I was like, okay, Giants, look, there's the formula. I know we don't like Dallas and they're the enemy, but there it is. This is what you need to do. Nope. They give us this. I don't know what it is that they gave us, but they're not giving us what we need. They're not giving Eli. They give Eli the weapons, but if you're not protecting him to get it to Odell or to give it to Marshall. Marshall didn't even have a touchdown before he got injured, which I was surprised. I mean, if he's not getting it to his guys, then what's the point? I mean, okay, they spent all the money, I believe, the previous year, and they bolstered up the defense, which was great because the defense kept us in a lot of games the previous season. So this was the season I feel they should have done something with that O-line. They could have done something with the O-line. They should have given them a decent running back and a decent tight end. Steve, I'm telling you, I think the last tight end that had any salt to him, and this is a stretch, I think was Boss. I think Boss. Because, I mean, really, the only tight end we had that impact, the last one, I believe, was Shockey. You know, I don't understand what's going on with the Giants organization right now. And I was very disappointed with them because, again, we had this thoughts of, you know, the Mariners are the class and they're the this, they're the that, they're whatever. But they really, really, really messed up. And don't let me get started with the Coughlin. Now, see, the few times I was able to get on the Giants broadcast, you know, I did say I have a problem with Coughlin. I thought it was time for Coughlin to go. I think the players tuned him out. And it just wasn't working anymore. You know, I just felt he was kind of old and out of touch, and he needed to go. I think it was just time for a new voice. You know, thank you. You gave us the two championships. You'll be a legend still for us in New York. But, you know, it's time to go. But then you just get rid of him. You leave everybody else, like it was just Coughlin, but you just get rid of Coughlin. That doesn't make any sense. You know, you have to bring on new staff, new voice, new people, new something. I mean, it was really surprising. But again, I was under the impression, though, that the Giants did enough this offseason that even with those deficiencies that they had at the front line, on the O-line, and no real tight end, and, you know, not so much of a running game, you know, not so much of a running back, that, okay, they might be able to do something. But, you know, then things started happening, and the injuries started piling up, which is just as well. So the Giants really killed me for football this season. And don't get me started with the whole thing, with the whole Geno Smith thing, because that was just, I mean, I could see what McAdoo was thinking. Let me see what these people have, and maybe you want to try to save Eli, but maybe you could go about it a different way. Don't just bench Eli. You know, maybe have him start and sit him down the second half. I mean, his streak would have been intact, which is really not that important. The important thing is the victory, but you got to respect Eli. Eli is still upright. He's still a functioning quarterback, and I feel in a different situation. Like, I believe Coughlin's in Jacksonville. Is he in Jacksonville? Steve?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so some people are saying that, you know, Eli might go there because it's like after this happens, there's almost like no turning back. You know, what can you do with Eli now? I mean, okay, and they fired Reese, and they fired McAdoo, which was great, which they had to do because their time, they just haven't been doing their jobs. And I know they've been interviewing. I really haven't been seeing anything. There was an alert just recently that the Giants were talking to the New England Patriots offensive coordinator, I believe it is. I didn't really get to see it because as soon as, like, I called, that's when the alert came in. So I'm not sure who it is that they're talking to now. But again, it's just really this Giants season, I can't even express on this phone how surprisingly bad that they were. Of course, you know, you can't take into you can't bet on injuries and all this other stuff, but it was a lot. And then you have this whole thing with Eli Apple. And I believe it was Landon Collins saying he's a cancer and all this other stuff. I'm like, wait a minute, what's going on? But you know what happens, though? When you lose, you start pointing fingers. You know, everything is magnified when you're a losing team. And the locker room just got fractured because they were not dealing with the issues that they have. And, you know, that's pretty bad. You know, it's really not good, and it's just very disappointing. There's just a lot of changes need to be made with the Giants organization to try to get them to be respectable again. I mean, I just want, like, the playoffs. I mean, let's not forget about Boatgate when they had that one playoff game to win, and they all go out and chilling on the boat and taking pictures. I mean, that was ridiculous, too. And, you know, even speaking with that, as much as I like Odell Beckham Jr., I understand he has to have that fire in his belly because I believe he has it and he wants it. But some of his act is getting a little tired for me. It's like, come on, Odell. It's like, let's try to focus more on the game here because – you know, I just feel he's a really good talent, but his antics sometimes get in the way from what he's doing. And he's the one that they're going to be riding with, possibly, because they have a lot of decisions that they have to make besides what they want to do with this roster. They have to decide what's going to happen with Eli and if they trade him, because, I don't feel there's too much going back after what happened this season. And Odell, I believe they're going to try to keep him, but Odell sometimes has more problems than he's worth. I know he's a young guy, and he gets a little emotional, and he wears his heart on his sleeve and X, Y, and Z, but, you know, you're not a rookie. And you have to see things need to get better. You know, it's just not working, your antics. And we want to see more football. We want to see success in a playoff. I mean, that playoff game when he was on the boat, if he would have just done his job, we probably wouldn't even be thinking about the boat. He had a horrible game. So it was like no excuse what you did. You're not practicing. You're flaunting that you're on this. I mean, I know it's old, but then you come up and then you play horrible the next game? You know, the voice in the locker room or somebody has to talk to him. I know Eli is more laid back, but somebody, there has to be some strong veteran presence, even which is strange because the Giants do have a good amount of veterans there, but somebody has to call these guys over and ring them in and try to tell them, you know, you gotta kind of get your head in the game. But the problem with that is, too, is when you know you're the franchise and they anointed you, I should say, the franchise, that's a problem because that could be also the conflict. It's like coach is telling you one thing, but management might be saying something else. You know, management might be okay with your antics because, you know, you're selling tickets because they're all billionaires and they think about that bottom line. And the Giants as a brand is great, but they know that Odell brings them in the seats. So maybe they just say, well, you know something, that's the head coach's problem. That's everyone else's problem. Let Odell be Odell. He's generating attention with his antics, which makes people want to tune in to see what he's going to do next. You know, it's really kind of hard because sports across the board, regardless of this annoying thing with analytics, it's about also the bottom line. It's still about the bottom line. It's about that money. how much money are you generating? Are you that star? Are you that one that people are willing cold or to sit, you know, for those limited games to pay that big dollar to see? Because if he's still bringing in and generating the income for the organization, that's speaks volumes more than anything else. Okay, yeah, let Odell act up. He's bringing attention. They're talking about him. Look, ESPN's talking about him. SportsCenter's talking about him. Fox Sports, they're talking about him. But you know what? He's wearing the Giants uniform. His jerseys are selling. He's one of the most recognized people in a short amount of time for you know, he's one of the most popular NFL players. Some people even saying that he's quickly becoming the face of the NFL. So when that happens, are the owners really going to try to reel somebody in? Or, you know, because, you know, we talked about this too, especially the guys on the Bleed Blue Show, which I always respect and I like talking to. We have some old school mentality, and we're not so much with the flash or with the, I mean, if, well, actually, let me take that back. We're okay with the flash as long as it translates into wins. You know what I mean? Get us wins. If you're want to propose to a net, or you want to do your Michael Jackson, or you want to do your LeBron, I have no problem if we're in the playoffs every year and possibly a championship. I have no problem at all. Do what you want. Go on any boat. You can take a boat to Florida if you want to, or South Africa if you want to. Take a boat as long as you come back and you produce. But, you know, that's not happening, and I just feel some of these owners now, it's more about, again, the bottom line, the money. The money is where it's at. And with him acting like this, we're getting more and more people, and that's the thing. So, yeah, so now I'm seeing that the coach search that they did for the Patriots offensive coordinator, Josh McDaniels. So that's the latest coach that, I mean, I just literally saw it right before I called. That's the coach that they're looking into right now. But whoever comes in, he has to really kind of put his stamp on it, because they have to make a decision with Eli, unfortunately. Me personally, again, I'm a big fan of Eli Manning. I like Eli Manning. I respect Eli Manning. I still feel he has some years left to him, and I feel that he can produce if he has an offensive line. And they haven't given him that. You're not giving him the requisite parts. You're giving him weapons, but you're not giving him protection. But I don't know if what happened could be fixed. Because this is really something else, you know. It's a very difficult situation, but a lot of tough decisions have to be made. But really, once you're thinking about it, those tough decisions should be made all the time. That's what the organization is all about. And as much as, like, I was basking in the beginning of this about the Patriots, you know what? They make those decisions. They say X got to go, Y got to go, C got to go. I mean, they got rid of Moss, I believe, after one season. You know, and he played well when he was with the Patriots at the time, regardless of his reputation. But you got to make those tough decisions if you're going to move on or start fresh. Maybe with this new staff, they would say that, hey, you know something? We have to go maybe the youth movement like the Knicks are doing right now. But there's something that they need that needs to be done, and someone has to make those tough decisions. Whoever the new GM is or whatever, he's going to make sure he does it. And hopefully he has some sort of conversation with whoever the coach is, and they're all on the same page. And the Giants will get back into respectability again. So I know it's going to take time, but it's something that needs to be done. And, you know, if it's going to be a building process, it's going to be a building process. And then, you know, we take it on from there. Now, moving to the Yankees, not much has been going on with the Yankees. I mean, they signed Sabathia to another year deal. What I like, though, you know, before I even get into that, what I like with the Yankees, you know, Hal Steinbrenner, as opposed to his father, he's being kind of budget conscious. I mean, you know, he's looking at the outlet. He's not just, I mean, George Steinbrenner, don't get me wrong, I believe he was one of the best managers, not only in New York, but the best managers, like, period. I put him up there with Buss, you know, for the Lakers. I just feel George would spend the money and he would get us the talent. But also I see with Hal, Hal is saying we can't just always throw money at a problem and just fix it. And I feel that that's what's going on with the Yankees. They're being fiscally responsible. They're not being cheap like the Mets. I mean, thank God when I'm not a Mets fan. The Mets have been cheap for I can't tell you how long, and it's ridiculous. They spend no money, and they don't care to spend any money. But who cares about them? That's why they're always in the outhouse, and the Yankees always in the penthouse when it comes to New York. But, you know, so how I give him credit for that, I really believe that he is trying not to spend too much. Because even with Sabathia, I believe what he did was he tried to see what was out there and what kind of interest there was. We probably saw there wasn't too much interest for Sabathia. Sabathia's getting a little bit older. He kind of messed up in the playoffs last season, the last game. He didn't he wasn't too stellar. But he's a good piece, I still feel. You know, he might be able to give you something still. I still feel Sabathia has something in the tank. And, you know, he says, let me just sign you to a one-year deal. And why not? Sign him to the one-year deal and see how it is. I like teams. Again, there's a difference in between being cheap and being fiscally responsible. And that's what I believe what Hal's trying to do. And, yes, we did get – oh, man, I hope I'm saying his name right. Stanton. We got him, which was a good addition. You know, I haven't really been checking up with baseball and what's been going on. And I gotta admit too, I don't think it was, I still think it was too soon for Girardi to go. You know, I just wasn't. I mean, I know they're getting younger. They got Judge, who's doing great, and I don't know. I think Girardi, it was a little premature. I mean, now they have Boone. I mean, I understand Boone. He helped on that last. Not the last, but won the World Series, I believe, when we played against Boston. I was in the – I'll never forget. I was in Manhattan in a bar, and I cannot forget the energy when he hit that home run. I mean, the place exploded when we were all watching that on those screens. So that is tattooed in my brain, Boone hitting that home run, because I was so nervous that game. But when he did it, he just hit that out the park. And I was, look at that. And I was like, and the Yankees finally did it. That was just, man, it was amazing. I'm telling you, that's one of the greatest moments for me being a Yankee fan, him hitting that ball. And again, remembering the energy in Manhattan and how we were just, I mean, we were on clouds. But I don't know how Boone is going to be. I know they said they wanted somebody younger to relate to the younger players. And, you know, they want to get a new voice. I mean, it's okay. I mean, the Yankees are good. I guess they don't want to stand in people. You know, they want to have a constant change. They don't want to have, I guess, like a lifer or something like that. Or, you know, maybe some of the players felt, I mean, there were some rumors that some of the players felt that Girardi wasn't really relating to them well. I don't know. I don't know what it was or what was going on there, but it's just really, really interesting, you know, how things are going to go with the Yankees and their and what they're going to do going forward. I mean, we still have to thank Derek Jeter and the great, wonderful thing that he did for us with that trade. Because, like I said, too, the Marlins, they were way over cap space. You know, they were way over the cap. And well, they spent a lot of money. They had to reduce their cap. So, and Steve, I have to ask you, did they, does he have a 10-year deal, this guy?
Yeah, he had that monster contract from a couple of years ago. He had a lot of years on the books. So the ownership for the Marlins, well, now it's Derek Jeter. So, you know, they're new at it. We don't want this no more. So they found a partner in the Yankees, and the rest is history.
Now, how many more years are left on that 10-year?
I think at least a good 2028, 29. It's up there, man.
Oh, my gosh. And see, that's the other risk-reward, I guess, with what they did. I mean, I know they wanted to pair someone off with Aaron Judge, but let's stop with the 10-year contracts. No one deserves a 10-year contract. I don't care if they're a rookie phenom coming out or it's LeBron James or anything like that. Nobody needs a 10-year contract. I think it's ridiculous. I feel 4 should be the max because,
okay.
You know, barring catastrophic injury or attrition or anything, I just feel – I mean, I know the Yankees didn't sign him to that, but they picked him up for that. But 10-year contracts are just ridiculous. There's just should be
well,
no need
you gotta,
for that.
But you got to remember also the players union negotiated with that with the owners. See, their structure of their CBA is totally different than the NBA and the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
So in Major League Baseball, probably along with hockey, same thing. Hockey and baseball have the most player-friendly type of deals. You could get 20-year contracts if you wanted to, whereas the NBA and the NFL is not the case because based on how their CBAs are with the players and the owners.
Well, even with that, Steve, it just because it's okay to do that doesn't mean you should do it because I don't think anyone you can say 10 years from now is going to be the one, which transitioned me over with which I want to transition now to basketball. But I didn't think I'd have enough material, but I guess I'm doing pretty good.
You're doing good, man.
Yeah, but getting back to baseball real quick. I mean, they said there's supposed to be some freeze going on, that no trades or anything have been going down. I'm not sure how true that is, but, you know, there's not much to talk about with baseball. And unfortunately, I tried to get into the Rangers because I was part of the Bleed Blue Brethren. I feel I was missing out on the conversation, but, you know, I haven't been watching too many Ranger games, I admit. But so I can't really speak on what's going on with the Rangers or anything like that.
It could be anything.
But,
I mean, we could, like, let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
Our teams, and then I want to ask you on the rest of the sports in general. Well, you mentioned, let's work our way backwards because the last team you brought up was the Yankees. You said your favorite Yankee moment was the Aaron Boone. What about your worst Yankee fan moment? What stung the most as a Yankee fan watching Yankees all these years?
Steve, I will admit this to you. I was so shocked and depressed when we lost to Boston when we were up 3-1.
Of course. 3-0.
That last game. Again, I was in – I'm not sure if the sports cafe was open back then. I think it was in New York City again in Manhattan. And I was done. I don't remember – because, you know, I don't drink alcohol, Steve, between you and me. I don't drink, smoke, or do drugs. I never did that stuff. I just never had to – so it's not like I was drinking beers or anything while I was watching this game and drinking alcohol. But, man, I was so devastated because I said there's no way because the week before when the Yankees took the third game, yeah, the fourth game, I said, oh, this is done. It's over. then you still keep saying it's over. It's over the next game. They're like, okay, we'll get him the next game. Okay, we'll get him the next game. Then all of a sudden to lose, man, I can't. That, as much as I could tell you, I was ecstatic with the boom shot. That lose, and to Boston of all teams, is still bothering me. That's like when John Starks just couldn't buy a basket that last game.
Oh, that was way worse.
Or when
way
Charles
worse
Smith kept getting blocked. Or, you
and
know, I could just go on and on.
I'll speak
oh
for me, man.
My
was
gosh,
way
I wanted to cry. I wanted to cry so badly, man. I mean, I was hurt, dude. I was on that train, and thank God I remember what my stop was because I wasn't paying attention. It was late at night. I'm on the A train going home from Manhattan. And I just looked down, Steve. I didn't look up. I didn't look up the whole time I was on the train. I just happened to look up at the right time when we got to Utica Avenue. But, yeah, that was one of my worst moments. Now, for my Knicks. Steve, I was going to bring this up before one of our previous programs. I'm not sure if I never called in or we just got off topic and I just left it alone. This thing with Chris, I love Chris Stapps. Don't get me wrong. I'm a big Chris Stapps fan. And I love his skill sets, his size and this, that, and the other. But I remember during preseason, not the regular season, during preseason, he missed a game because of rest. This season. And I'm like, he needs rest for the preseason game? Who rests for a preseason game? Okay, I know Alan Hahn just came out this whole thing that he's anemic. He has an iron deficiency. Okay, he's a tall body, this, that, and the other. I guess we could kind of pass on that, him saying he's tired, but KP has to be careful how he talks to the New York media. The New York media will chew you up and spit you out. We all know that. You know, he can't be honest. He has to just say things in general. But this thing with him saying that and saying how much he misses Tim Hardaway Jr. But, you know, we also got to take account to his age. He's 22. But this is your third year in the league. And Melo's gone now. And that's what I was saying to a lot of people. I was like, and you know I'm a big Carmelo fan. I'm still rooting for Melo in OKC. And I'm not gonna lie about it. And I'm not going to apologize about it. It doesn't mean I'm any less of a Knicks fan. Because, again, I put in too many decades of my life into the orange and blue. So there's no way I'm not going to ever be a Knicks fan because I don't think I can be any other thing but a Knicks fan. And I really feel it annoying, and I stopped actually addressing that on social media and to people. It's like, no, my Knicks fandom isn't gone. It's always going to be there because it's basically in my blood. I mean, again, I've been with the Knicks since the 90s. You know, I always admit, I always say this, Magic Johnson was the first one to get me into basketball. I was a big Magic Johnson fan, but I still, even though I was a big fan of his,
Was that him out of Michigan State, or was he became a Laker?
No, he was a Laker already.
Okay.
I became a fan, like, right before, like you know, in the, well, actually, right before they won those back-to-back championships, like, right before that season. That's when I started actually watching basketball. That was back in 88, 87. But I still paid attention to the Knicks. You know, the Trent Tuckers and the Gerald Wilkins, Eddie Lee Wilkins, the Sparrow was on there. Then we went to Kenny Skywalker. Then, you know, the list goes on and on. We had, I always pay attention. The Knicks used to come on Channel 9 late at night. And I used to watch the Knicks at night. You know, we had Johnny Newman. We had, you know, so many players who wore the Knick uniform coming in and out. You know, I don't want to go down all the lists or go running out of time, but, you know, I'm deeply invested, entrenched of Knicks, and that's not going to change. It's not going to change. I could still root for somebody, but it's not going to change my fandom for the Knicks. But getting back to KP, KP for saying, again, he has to watch what he's saying. I mean, I know he misses Tim Hardaway, but, you know, Tim Hardaway, you still have, you know, they're in games. It's not like the Knicks are being blown out. You know, they're not losing by 20 or 30 or anything like that. They're still hanging with people. They're still giving us a chance, but they're not putting it together toward the end, which is kind of bad. And, you know, with KP now, without a Tim Hardaway Jr. or without a Carmelo Anthony, it's on him. The defenses are focusing on him even more. See, there's a saying in the NBA, which I'm really starting to believe. By December, we know who you are. Yes, they had a lot of home games, but I didn't think it was fair. I think the NBA schedule this season is very questionable, besides some of the back-to-backs, but I'm seeing a lot of teams having a lot of home games in the first half of the season, which doesn't make sense to me. But they have to get over this thing with the road victories. You know, this thing with them being on the road has to be addressed, because if you really want to be that team, you have to be able to do it at home and away. There's no two ways about it, Steve. You're not going to make it to the playoffs. Well, you might in the East, but you're not going to if you're going to just keep winning home games. You know, you got to be able to bring down the road. Now, they lost to the Spurs, which was understandable. I mean, most people, that's not something to be ashamed of, losing to the Spurs. Because the Spurs are like a well-oiled machine. They've always been like that for decades. But, and, you know, for KP to say that he's getting tired, and I believe they said Jeff Hornacek said they're going to reduce his minutes, it's kind of like, okay, well, you know, your body should be a little acclimated to the season right now. I mean, this is your third season. Granted, KP hasn't played a full season since his rookie year, and that's the problem when you have someone so tall. And, you know, I alluded to this on Twitter, I believe, and you retweeted me about it, that Chandler and Dom, they talked about, you know, if they're confident in KP being that guy. Maybe he's that guy in spurts, because, I mean, he was hitting 30 all first half. Then he had another injury. He rolled his ankle, which was messed up. It seemed like he recovered well. I mean, they still gave him some games off, which I thought was good. So his first game back, I was like, okay, maybe it's just rust. I was like, maybe it's just rust. You know, he should be okay. But then it's like, his scoring keeps regressing. And maybe because Tim Hardaway Jr. isn't there. With Tim Hardaway Jr., there's another scorer that's on the Knicks. That's a good scorer. And you have to pay attention. You can't get into KP like you can. But now when it's just KP, they can get into him. And, you know, the formula is out, Steve, that you have to take his legs from under him, because he still doesn't have that vertical base. He doesn't have it. You know, and if you look at Karl Anthony Towns and his body. He has an NBA-ready body. And look at, you know, he's not as fluid as KP, but he has that strength already. And if you look at Joel Embiid, I mean, Embiid, he hasn't played too many games these past few seasons, so he should be nothing but fresh. But look at his body. So maybe it's just the fact that, you know, KP still has to grow into his man body. That's all we could hope for. Because what's getting scary, Steve, is the Yao Ming comparisons. Because you remember Yao Ming, he was, I think, 7'3", 7'4". And, you know, he played pretty well, and then he started having injuries. But, you know, I'm just hoping when KP grows into his body that he'll be able to do it. Because Asim made a good point, too. I forgot all about when Patrick Ewing first came. Patrick Ewing was injured a lot when he first came to the Knicks, you know, his first probably 2-3 years. And then Patrick Ewing grew, and he had that strength. But, you know, it's really it's really going to be interesting what's going to happen. And see, and you know what, too? As much as I like Jarrett Jack basically changed the whole outlook of the Knicks, and Enes Kanter. Enes Kanter did also. You know, Enes Kanter, offensively, on one side of the ball, I really like him. His offensive rebounds and his scoring, you know, he's that traditional low post scoring center. I really like the addition of Kanter. And, he, you know, he has that flair, but Tim Hardaway Jr. is the only one who's really like, I'm going to give it to you. You know, I don't care who you are. Now, again, I wasn't so happy about his contract. I'm not going to say I was. I thought that we overpaid him. But he's been playing well, and he gives the Knicks that moxie. Now, do I want Tim Hardaway Jr.? Do I feel he could take us to the promised land? No. But, again, he gives that attitude I feel that's missing. Not only is his scoring missing, but his attitude is missing. Because Tim Hardaway Jr., like him or not, he's going to shoot that ball, and his attitude is nobody can stop me. And you need, you know, you need those guys with dog in them. Like, nah, I'm going down with the fight. Because KP doesn't really have that just as yet. You know, he's more mellow. Not Carmelo, but he's more like laid back, I should say. And that could be it too, because some people say maybe KP is not the one. Maybe he's a better suited as a two. Maybe there has to be somebody there that the defenses are going to hone into and he'd be on the side. But I think it's still too early because the jury is out. And like I said, I am rooting for him. I am rooting for KP to do well with the Knicks. And also Frank Ntilikina. Man, Frank Ntilikina, let me tell you something. I don't care what anybody says. That rookie, Frank, impresses me every time. Every time he steps on the floor, he seems more sure of himself. He takes these shots. I'm not saying that they're great, but the fact that he's taking them, Steve, the fact that he's looking for people, he's looking to take the three, he's looking to pass. I mean, he's not perfect. I'm not saying he is in any stretch of imagination, but him getting the burn that he's getting, I think is paying off. I really, really like Frank Ntilikina. He's coming off the bench, which is good. Don't give him the reins just as yet. Don't give him the keys. Let him still learn from Sessions and from JJ. I understand that. Let him slowly get into it. But I can really see, I'm telling you, this whole thing with KP and Frank makes me very optimistic about the Knicks, where I wasn't there last season. And as much as people want to, you know, get after Phil for bringing in the triangle guy, which I was on that same person, he's really surpassing my expectation. His length, his defense, and the fact he didn't back down from LeBron. Lonzo Ball, when the Lakers about to get into something, Lonzo Ball walks away like a little girl. Oh, excuse me, I shouldn't say that. Like a little punk. That's what I should say. Sorry, ladies, any ladies listening. But he walks away. Frank went up and pushed LeBron back. I know you're bigger. I know you're the face of this league, but you're not punking me. No. And I know I'm from another country. You're from the United. I'm playing in the United States, but you're not going to snatch my heart. You're not doing that. I was so impressed from that day on with Frank. And like I said, his length, his athleticism is going to get there. He has pretty good athleticism. But Frank, to me, is really one of the Knicks that's been standing out this season. Every time he comes on, I must admit, when he comes on off the bench, I see myself paying more attention. Because I say, you know, what's this guy going to do? And he just seems so sure of himself now for his first year. I just feel the ceiling for him is going to be pretty high. I'm not sure about all-star or superstar or anything like that, but we have a good nucleus that's starting here. And that should be a good thing. Now, the Knicks also, I believe, need to make a move. They have to do something for Hernan Gomez, or they have to do something with O'Quinn. Because I feel they have too many bigs. You know, I feel some sort of move has to be made. I think they need, like, either athletic wing or maybe another guard, a two-way guard, something they need. They need some sort of – they just have too many bigs. And I can't tell you how pissed off I am still seeing Joe Kim Noah on the bench. I mean, I know he played well with the San – I think, was it San Antonio? I forgot what game it was where he came in and they won the game. I don't even remember, just recently. And everyone wants to say, oh, look how good he played and look at this, that, and the other. I guess he could offer some things. I don't have any faith in Joe Kim Noah. And, yes, I was on the side of I thought it was a great idea that we got him. But he's always injured, you know. I mean, how much longer do you think he's going to be there? Speaking of, you know, making tough decisions, Knicks have a lot of tough decisions to make. They got to figure out what they're going to do with Enes Kanter this offseason. I mean, I know it's far before the offseason. Well, what are they going to do with this roster? Because this roster, as good as it's been, I'm not sure if it's a playoff. Maybe they might sneak into the playoffs. We could all hope. But there's a lot of things that just need to be done. I'm not sure if the Knicks are attractive yet, that other teams would actually really consider us. Because that pisses me off too, Steve. Every ball player, seems like, especially superstars, they love using the Knicks as leverage. And I'm sick of that. Durant, Kyrie, LeBron, all of them. They use the Knicks as leverage. They don't use them for anything else. They don't really seriously consider going to the Knicks. And then everyone just falls in love with them. And don't get me started on the fan, on the bipolar Knicks fan, some of them. Because again, thank God for the Bleed Blue show, because I have some sanity. Because the bipolar Knicks fans that are on social media and some of these other things, they really get on my nerves. When things are going good, we're going to the championships. When things are going bad, oh, you're trying to trade KP. We got to get rid of Jeff Hornacek. We got to get rid of this one. Got to get rid of that one. I'm like, it's two games they lost. Well, you're trading everybody. You were just all happy last week. And even the Garden crowd, you know, it's almost sad because it's like we are so desperate to success that they was chanting MVP for Beasley. What other stadium? It's almost like shameful. It's like first few games when KP was shooting 30, you chanting MVP for him. Beasley shoots 30 for a few games down, he's MVP. I'm like, come on, Garden crowd. In the world of Charles Barkley, come on, man. So anybody who starts out on one day, you're going to do the MVP chance, I think it's pretty pathetic. New York fans allegedly are supposed to be the most knowledgeable fans and the most this, that, and the other. We're like the standard, and we're this, that, and the other. But we are so desperate for any flicker of a blink of success that we just attach ourselves to anything. I mean, do you think you could go to San Antonio or the Lakers or any place, and Michael Beasley, they'd be chanting MVP for him? I mean, people thought it was a cute, nice gesture, but I just feel it was just completely – I thought that was shameful. I'm like, come on, Knicks fans. Let's get it together here. Let's not put on stage how desperate we are. But apparently that they do. They do it all the time. But, hey, what can you do? I wanted to get more into the NBA, but I know I'm running out of time. I would take up this much time. So I'm a little bit surprised I was able to do it. But, I was just going off my head for what it –
Let me get your thoughts real quick on the NBA. Overall, the state of the NBA right now as you see it.
Overall, the state of the NBA, this is one of the most exciting seasons I've seen because there's been a lot of movement. There's been a lot of people who've been stuck on teams like Jimmy Butler and Melo and Chris Paul. People, this uprooting and changing of destinations is really make the NBA exciting for me. I'm looking forward to so many games now because things are different now, Steve. You know what I mean? With this off season, I think was one of the best things to put some energy back into the league. And I said this once, and I'll say it a million times, I'll do anything, anything not to see another Golden State and Cleveland Cavalier final. I'm not saying it's going to happen or even, you know, no disrespect. I mean, I like LeBron, but I don't want to see LeBron in the finals anymore. If Toronto or Washington or if what's-his-name didn't get injured for the Celtics, gosh, what's his name? Remember the guy who got injured? He was from Utah. I can't believe I forgot his name. But anyway, if he didn't get injured.
Gordon Hayward?
Yeah, Hayward, that's right. If Hayward didn't get injured, maybe Boston could have done it because Boston's defense is amazing. I mean, they tear into you with that defense. I mean, it's ravage. And how they play. Brad Stevens is just an excellent coach. He really is a good coach. If you're playing on Boston, everyone from the starters to the bench, even Kyrie, who's not known for his defense, their defensive efficiency is always number one. I'm very impressed with the Celtics. You know, I'm impressed what's going on in Houston. I mean, Chris Paul and Harden. I mean, Chris Paul keeps getting injured, which is the only thing that's bad. That's going to affect his contract. OKC, they're starting to hit their stride now. And, you know, I'm happy to see Melo happy. You know, the Jimmy Butler with the and the Spurs are still doing that thing. Jimmy Butler with the Timberwolves. I just feel it's real interesting with all the changes that's made. So it makes you intrigued to see some of these matchups. So, you know, I think overall the NBA is in a good place. And I just really hope that this is the year that if anything, Cleveland gets stopped. Let's stop. I don't want to see LeBron anymore in the finals. I'm sick of this. I'm sick of this story. I mean, six going on 7 years, he made the finals. Come on. I've had enough. I'll miss LeBron when he's gone, but I don't need to see the story again. And Golden State, they're still the powerhouse, but, you know, if someone could beat Golden State too, that'll be great. I can't wait. So, again, overall, I think it's good. The Knicks were playing pretty good, but, you know, they're a little iffy right now, and we'll just see how the rest of the season goes, man. And, you know, again, I got to thank you guys on the Bleed Blue Show. I've been with you guys for the past few years. You, Godfather, Knickerbocker Av, Asim, Dom, Chandler. I'm sure I'm forgetting some, but, you know, I just really want to thank you guys again for giving me this platform and not only just having us call in while you and my Godfather talk and do our opinions. You guys let us feel our importance of our opinions and because we're able to contribute to the show, and that helps because you know, all the different perspectives and thoughts, it kind of brings value to what we're thinking of. And the Bleed Blue Show is the only show I know that gives its fans this platform. And I believe the past few years, calling into the Bleed Blue Show was one of the best decisions I've ever made. And I've never forgotten it. And I'm very grateful to you and Godfather. You guys have done an excellent job. And, you know, I'm just very appreciative of what you guys are doing. Please continue what you're doing.
Yeah, much respect. Marlo, thank you very much on your spotlight. You know I got to get a part two with you, Ben, because I'm definitely not done with talking our team, sports in general, because I'm pretty sure we could have a 4 or 5 hour conversation.
I talk too much. It's the Gemini in me.
Yeah. Me and you think a lot. When it comes to our teams, because we're fans of the same era, we have a mentality that's similar. It's kind of like some of the guys on the platforms that we speak sports. So, I mean, this is what we do as far as individual intellect, bring your own opinions, and do your own research, and then express yourselves with us and with other people. We try to make it an environment where it's all of us. It's not about the host. It's about everybody. But somebody had to create the platform, so I said, you know what?
Thank you. Let's do this.
Let's have some fun. Yeah, man, it's all no problem. It's all about bringing great fans together. It's a passion, man, bringing great fans together. That's what it's about at the end of the day, man. But I got to
thank you.
I
appreciate it.
I might have to do a part two. I might have to get you back here on the next month. I might have to get some other people, push them back down the line. Cause I got some questions to ask you. You had a lot to say. And I ain't had a chance to get to them, but let's get to another part two with yourself very soon, man.
I still have some things I need to get off my chest.
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt, man. Without a doubt. My brother, Marlo, man, it's an honor at Drago NYC on Twitter, fighting off Knicks trolls and spreading
you,
love
Steve.
To Knicks fans, Yankee, Giants, Rangers, all that good stuff. Marlo, you know, thank you, man. This episode will be on our website. And, of course, iTunes, Podcast Republic, TuneIn, and your Stitcher apps. That's, follow Marlo on Twitter, once again, at Drago NYC. That's DRAGONYC on Twitter. Marlo, man, thank you very much. And then here everybody knows what we do. Sangre Azul, Bleed Blue. Play a spotlight with Drago NYC. That's Marlo. Thank you.
Bleed Blue.
Bleed Blue.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Bleep bloop, 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 bleep bloop.
When you come to Carrabba's Italian Grill on a Monday, you're going to say,
wow, a three-course meal for only $12.99?
On Amore Monday, get Carrabba's delicious made-from-scratch entrees, including super salad and your choice of an appetizer or dessert.
That's a huge meal for only $12.99. Wow.
Choose Carrabba's homemade lasagna, prosciutto-wrapped pork tenderloin, or linguine positano with chicken, plus two other courses.
Wow, now I love Mondays.
Come to Carrabba's this Amore Monday for a delicious three-course meal starting at only $12.99.
Wow.
Support for this podcast comes from the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, ranked one of the top cancer centers in the nation for the last 27 years. The doctors at MD Anderson treat more rare cancers in a single day than many physicians see in a lifetime. And treatment plans are tailored to an individual patient's needs, allowing more comprehensive and thorough care. To become a patient, please visit makingcancerhistory.com.